Welcome to The Full 60 featuring Craig Custance and presented by The Athletic. Each week, we'll dive into the biggest stories in hockey while bringing in unique voices to entertain and explain all aspects of the game.
Hey, this is Craig, and welcome to this week's episode of The Full 60. And I am thrilled to have this week's guest, Eddie Lack, on the line. And this is our second attempt at this. We had one time, and I think it was our end, terrible effort on my part. I think the phone lines were down or something terrible happened, and we had to reschedule it. And it took a year, and I'm so happy we're able to do it. Eddie, thank you for doing this. Thank you for your patience. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm not really sure what happened last time, if it was on my part or yours, but I'm...
No, it was us for sure.
Super happy to be on here now, so...
I'm excited to do this. Last time it was pegged to your retirement. You know, it had come out you were retiring from hockey, and I actually like doing it now better because you've got so many things going on, and I love people like this that have a lot of things on the go, and we're going to get to all of those. But and I know we're going to drop this in about 2 weeks, so this might seem like old news to the listener, but I'm coming off of Ryan Miller's retirement press conference, and I don't want to miss the opportunity to talk to someone who played with Ryan and can really talk about his impact on the game of hockey. When you think about Ryan Miller, the NHL goalie, Eddie, what comes to mind?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is just a good friend for me. I feel like I feel like when we played together and everything, we created a really good bond in a short period of time. And yeah, like I feel like we had so much fun together during that short time. Right. And just as a goalie, he was just one of the most well-prepared pros that I play with, I think. Like, everything was just down to very small details that, like, when you put them all together, they make a lot of sense. And, right. Like, he was just so anal about his gear. And, like, I remember when we were in Toronto, because the Vaughn gear rep and everything was there, right? And we practiced, I think, 11 or 12 in the morning, and by the time the bus was supposed to leave, it was like 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and like Ryan Miller was still there talking about his gear, trying to fix a few like things and tweak it a little bit. And I don't think he came back to like the hotel until like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I think. And it was like such tiny details, like a small graphic print on his blocker. He felt that the puck was bouncing weird off of it and everything.
Really?
Like that. It was just... He was super, super down to details and everything, but obviously it worked for him. I mean, what a career.
Yeah. I remember talking to him once. We were actually talking about concussions, because he had had a point, I forget if it was in Buffalo or Vancouver, where it was, where he had missed time. He'd gotten hit in the head and missed time with a concussion. I think it was Buffalo. And he, you know, one of the things he was talking about was how planned out everything was for him throughout the course of the season, like weeks in advance, like down to the minute. Like, he was so meticulous. And so he's just like, people don't realize for a goalie, when that gets thrown away and you know, all of your plans are swept aside, it can totally mess up an entire season. Like, were you like that? Did you see that?
A little bit. I wouldn't say that I was as particular as he was, but obviously us goalies get our reputation for a reason, right? And we're overthinking it, and we're a little weird and everything like that, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I was a little bit like that, but not too much.
Yeah. So do you have a moment with playing with him that stands out, like a game or a?
I don't know if it was just one game in a particular. I just think that it was more like the full year that we got together, and like especially when he got hurt there, and I had to carry like the bulk of the load there, and I think I played like 27 or 28 games in a row. No one was more supportive of me than he was, right? And that's kind of what when you show your true colors as a teammate and everything too, right? And then and like he really proved to me what a great person he is.
Yeah. Staying on goalies for a second, I look at your career and I mean, you played, you played with, in Vancouver, you talk about the greatest goalies in their country and of kind of their generation, Roberto Luongo for Canada, Ryan Miller for the U.S. You played, Henrik Lundqvist, I think, in a Worlds, right, at one point,
yeah,
if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I when I was 17 and I played my first pro year in Sweden, I actually played with Ed Belfour. So, I've played with some really cool goalies.
Is there any thread that you, when you look at Eddie Belfour and Ryan Miller and Henrik Lundqvist and Roberto Luongo, is there anything that ties them together?
Me.
Eddie Lack is the correct answer. That's what we were going for.
No, just like they were all great, great goalies, but all of them just had this, they were all so humble and like, they were all just like willing to share their knowledge with me, which I thought was just so, so cool because when you get to that level too, you're essentially fighting for the same spot, yeah. Right? And, that's the thing when you're a goalie, only one can play, unfortunately. It's not like there's right. four lines and everything like that, right? So they were all just like extremely helpful with me, and I don't really think that I could have gotten where I got without any of them, you know?
Didn't you take Ed Belfour's job pretty much? Like, I don't know if that would have gone over real well.
No, I wouldn't say that. But I was 17 years old, I think, when he came, and I didn't play a lot. So I played every game before he came because he came like 20 games into the season, and then he actually, so this is a pretty funny story, but it was huge in Sweden that Ed Belfour was going to come, right?
Yeah.
And play in the second division. So for his first game, the fans were all pumped up. The media was all pumped, like, this was the biggest thing that was going to happen, right?
Yeah.
And the first game, his first shot on net went in, and like the whole rink just got dead quiet. Like, I've never heard a rink go that quiet in my entire life. It was like everyone's like, what happened here? Like, this was not supposed to happen. And after he let that first goal in, he broke the shutout record in that league. So he had like three or four shutouts in a row, I think. So it was like one shot and then he just closed shut.
That's amazing. That's great. That shows the kind of competitor he was, I imagine.
Yeah.
So in that era, I mean, you get off to a good start. How disappointed were you that, I mean, you were on the draft list, but didn't go drafted. What was that like for you as somebody kind of trying to work their way up?
I didn't really think that too much about the draft. I was more just happy that I was on the list, and I didn't really expect a whole lot. My mindset was always that I knew that goalies take a longer time to develop, so it doesn't really matter if I get drafted or not when I'm 18 or 19, because I most likely won't be able to like play in the NHL until I'm like at least 23, 24, 25, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
I didn't really focus on it too much. I was mostly just focused on what I could do to get better every single day, right?
Yeah. How did it end up with Vancouver? Was there, you know, were they a team that was in touch with you at that time?
Yeah, so not at the draft time, but they came 2 years later when I played with Jacob Markstrom in the Swedish Elite League. So I was Jacob's backup then, and I was hurt in the beginning of the year too, so I think I only played like 15 games there or something. So I knew that Jacob was already drafted by Florida then, and he was the guy that everyone looked at, right?
Right.
So I didn't really expect to get NHL offers or anything like that, but when Vancouver reached out, I was just like shocked at first. I'm like, well, I haven't really played. I don't know if I'm ready for it or not.
Yeah.
And they pretty much gave me like 24 hours to think about it. I'm like, well,
what?
And I'm like, I'm gonna, no matter when I go over to North America, I am gonna have to start in the minor league anyway.
Yeah.
Like the only two Swedish guys that have not started in the minor leagues are the King and Jonas Gustafsson, right?
So yeah.
The
monster.
So I just thought to myself that I'm gonna have to play in the minors no matter what. So I might as well start that journey right away instead of keep playing in Sweden and everything. And I don't know if I'm gonna get hurt tomorrow or like the next day, right? And then this chance might not ever come again. So
right.
Yeah, I just went for it, and I was fortunate enough that it worked out.
Yeah, and then at that point, you're playing for Claude Noel, right, in Manitoba when you came over.
Yeah,
what an interesting guy! Holy cow!
Oh, I loved him. He was always like, you got to bring your A game, Eddie. You got to bring your A game. I'm like, yeah, sure, yeah. And I remember so we were on like a 4 or 5 game losing streak, and he printed these T-shirts for everyone in the team. And all that it said was, the beating will continue until morale improves. Well, like, all right, great. All right, yeah, we're in for another bag skate here.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I do you still have that T-shirt somewhere? I would keep that.
Probably. I'm pretty sure that it's in Sweden with my dad, I think.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's perfect. I like that his goalie coaching consisted of, hey, bring your A game. That would be about as far as I would get with the goalies.
No, exactly. He's like, well, you had your B game last game. It was kind of good, but like tonight, if we're going to have a chance, we need your A game. Okay. And I'm like, all right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to try.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. So, what I thought was cool, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you got to be a part of the Canucks playoff run, right? Like when Corey and Roberto were up, and yeah, weren't you part of the practice squad or the Black Aces?
Yeah. Yeah. So we made it two rounds, game seven, with Matt Manitoba, which is still the longest game that I've ever played. That was triple overtime.
Really?
And I'm just exhausted thinking about it still, but yeah.
Who was that against?
Hamilton Bulldogs.
Mm.
Got eliminated then. So we came just for the third round against the Sharks to Vancouver. Yeah, it was so cool.
Yeah. What do you learn when you just get to be around the team in that process?
I think it's mostly just you see the pressure that these guys are going through, and like you see how everyone reacts in around the city, and like how much pressure is actually on these guys, and like that kind of prepares you, I think, if you were to be in a similar position yourself a little bit, and yeah, like the whole city was just dying to get that cup, right? But yeah, so close.
It was and not only that, like you got, like there was goalie controversy, right? You had two great goalies in Corey Schneider and Roberto Luongo, and you know, Roberto, like kind of that odd, him, you know, shutting them out at home and struggling on the road. It was a fascinating goalie series. And then, of course, Tim Thomas on the other end and all the controversy. It was wild.
It was just unbelievable. Yeah. Oh. Tim Thomas, he was just so good. That, yeah, it's crazy.
All right. So what do you remember about your NHL debut? I always love hearing these stories.
So we were in Calgary away, obviously. and back then, we had these heart rate monitors on when we played the game and everything, yeah, thing too. And apparently Roger Takahashi, my strength coach there, told me after the game that they didn't think that I was going to make the entire game because my heart rate was like 180 during the national anthem. And they were just dying in the press box, apparently. Like, oh my God, he's so nervous. How is this going to go?
That's amazing.
That's the most nervous goalie in the league now. So, yeah. But, yeah, we won 5-4 in overtime. And yeah, that was a good start.
I didn't know. So, I knew Vancouver was always into that. Like, you know, Mike Gillis was pretty out front with technology, but I'm surprised the players would allow the heart rate monitors during games. Like that seems like something guys would say no thanks to.
Yeah, there's so I think more now the NHLPA has kind of gotten in the way of
stuff
like that, right? But yeah, back in the day, that was, I can't remember. It was like optional, but not really. They're like, we really want you to wear these. And I'm that's like, all right, well, it's my first ever game.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say no, and then Lou is going to play again.
That's right. That's right. It's optional if you, you know, but if you don't want to wear them, don't expect to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you learn from Roberto Luongo?
So when I first came there, I would say that I learned a ton of technical stuff, first of all, because we kind of play the game the same way. Like he was playing inside of the paint and he was a little bit deeper and just like so good at working his angles and everything like that. So when I first came over, I was a little bit all over the place. So I took a lot from him my first years and everything there. And then I learned a lot off the ice on how to be a pro and everything too, because if I was all over the place on the ice, I was even more all over the place in the locker room, I would say. So I kind of learned from him that there's a time and place for everything, right? Sometimes you just need to keep your mouth shut.
So when you say you were all over the place, you had a bit of a mouth on you?
Yeah, but I like to joke around with the guys, and I liked being kind of the jokester on the team and everything like that. And I quickly learned that works for practice days and everything like that. But when you make it to the NHL and there's an actual game going on, you need to stay quiet at times.
That's a good lesson. I think it's funny when I talk to people in Florida in their front office, they say Roberto is so smart, and like he is a GM or whatever he wants to be in hockey in the making. Like they're like, there's no doubt he's like on the fast track.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, he's I don't think the guy, because obviously he has enough money to just retire and everything, right? But that's just so not like him. I just think that what he can bring to the teams and everything like that, like he needs to keep working and like providing value, because he's got so much value to provide.
All right, let's take a quick break. I want to get into your post-playing days a little bit, because it's fascinating to see and to follow along on Twitter too, and we'll definitely encourage people to follow on Twitter.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. So Eddie, you've got a few things on the go, but I want to talk a little bit about Arizona, the ASU hockey program, because I think what they've done there is set up almost like a model on how to launch a hockey college hockey program and like that other colleges that don't have hockey could steal and replicate, because it's been so successful. Why, when I mean, you're an assistant coach there, why do you think it's been so successful?
I think it starts first with the coaching staff and everyone here. I think Greg Powers, Al Hicks, and Mike Fields has done a tremendous job with like coaching, recruiting, and just getting everyone to pull the same way. I truly believe that a lot starts there, but then you look at where we are too. It's we're in Arizona. The weather is always good. We got the ASU college. We have a competitive team now with good coaches and everyone great around the rink. And the only thing we're really missing is the new rink, right? And that's about, I think we're about a year and a half away from being completed. So we're really getting there, I think. So, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you want to play here once the rink is done too? We're going to be a top 10 college every single year, I think. And with all the facilities and the coaching staff and everything we got, I mean, why wouldn't you want to play here?
You're going to get every top recruit for the next decade. That's my prediction. Why would, if you're the best player in the U.S., why would you go anywhere else at this point? And I'm not just saying that to, like, for real. Like, that's where I would go. There's no.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Greg Powers, like, you guys missed Austin Matthews by, 2 years? Like, if he was coming up now, you would be playing there. There's no doubt in my mind.
No, I know. And, like, man, that would have been so much fun having him here playing for ASU. But, yeah, I mean, he's doing pretty good himself right now, too, I guess.
I guess it's worked out all right, his career path. how do you find working with that age kids? Like, you know, to go from the NHL to the college age kids.
I like it. I think that comparing the NHL and the AHL to college you're just gonna have to accept that there's gonna be mistakes made, and like you're just gonna have to let these kids make mistakes, because that's how they're eventually gonna learn and grow from it and be ready at the next level, and don't make those mistakes at the next level, right? So
right.
I think that's a very, very big part of it, to understand that they are still kids. Mm-hmm. and they are gonna have to be allowed to make mistakes to grow.
Right. Do you find that the kids are arriving now? Like, I've talked to goalies, and they're like, I can't believe how technical these young goalies are. Like, they arrive so well versed in how to play goal. Like, how much of that advancement are you seeing with the young players coming up?
They're all so technical within the goalie position and everything. I mean,
yeah,
they're way better skaters than I ever was, right? and I think that the only thing that some of these kids are missing is that they get so position specific so early in life that they're not 100% well rounded as athletes. Like they know only the situations that they've seen throughout playing hockey, but there's playing sports, there's so many different things that you can go through, and there's so many different situations and everything like that. That's why when I always have parents come up and ask about like practice and everything when like the kids are only 9-10 years old, right, I always say, just don't focus on hockey only. Play soccer in the summer, or football, or baseball, or whatever, right? Most of the best goalies that I see, well, all 60 goalies in the NHL, not two of them look like the other guy, right?
Yeah.
They have 60 unique styles. And a lot of what I see from the kids that are coming up now, they all look kind of similar, but when I look at the NHL, that they're all unique goalies. So find out what works for you and become your own unique goalie, instead of just like going with one mold that you think fits everyone, because I don't think there's one mold that fits everyone.
Yeah.
When it comes to goaltending.
What was your upbringing like in terms of playing sports? Like, what other sports were you playing?
So I played soccer up until I think I was 15. That's when I kind of had to choose. But yeah, it was hockey 6 months out of the year, and then it was soccer 6 months out of the year, right?
Yeah.
Like those two never really switched until I was, I mean, I started playing a little bit more hockey, I think, when I was maybe 12, 13, 14, but I never played year round like some of these kids do now.
Yeah.
Like the most that I played was probably 8 months out of the year, right?
Yeah, there's a book called Range by, I think it's David Epstein, that talks about how we think that the best people, the best athletes or musicians are doing it year round, but in reality, it's usually the opposite. It's the people that are doing other things and kind of discover later in life what they want to do, and because they're so passionate about it, and that's what leads to success, not focusing on something as a 6-year-old. So that's, I've got 3 kids, so that's been our approach. It's like, you know, play whatever's in season.
Yeah. And I see a guy like Jacob Markstrom too. Mm. Like he's like an elite starter in the NHL now, right? And he didn't start playing goalie until he was like 12 or 13, I think.
Mm.
And then he got drafted at 18, right?
Wow.
Which is crazy. But when you are that passionate about something, I don't think it takes that long to learn it, right?
Hmm. Yeah. How did you, what went into your decision to stay in the US versus going back to Sweden?
So my wife is American. She's from Chicago.
Okay.
And with me being able to get the green card and everything here, like we had the choice of either Sweden and here, mm-hmm. and I just like it here so much better with the weather and just the way of life.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Sweden, but it's perfect for us to go and visit now and see family and everything like that. But I don't think I want to live in Sweden again. I don't think, but plans always change, I guess.
Yeah. I love Sweden. Like I've gone, you know, over there for international tournaments or whatever. And that's on my like dream. If we're like, hey, if we ever want to like just pick up and go somewhere, but I've never really gone and when it's gotten really cold, so I can't really judge.
That is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And it's not really about the cold. I just think that it's so dark. I mean, the sun is not up for long every day in the winter, but then in the summer it never goes down, right? But the winters are just really tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. All right. So Eddie, before we get to the Twitter questions, I did want to ask, so you're in the real estate and like, you know, if you want to plug your real estate efforts, by all means do so, but you don't see a lot of former NHL players, or at least I don't see it in that space. What is it about that area that got you into it?
Yeah. So my family's been doing it ever since I grew up and it's just something that's always been interesting to me, probably because I grew up with it. And I been doing investments and everything by myself while I was playing, but yeah, it's always something that I've been interested in, and I kind of knew already that this is what I wanted to do once I retired.
Yeah. Like you're doing the whole thing. You're like showing people houses and walking them through and this is a 4-bedroom, 2-bath, you know, the whole routine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a full on real estate agent, but we also do Airbnbs and rentals and flips and everything down here as well. So I'm doing a little bit of everything.
So let's say hypothetically you were doing a podcast interview with somebody who just bought land to build a house on to turn into an Airbnb. What advice would you give them?
Well, it all depends where it's at, but yeah, just for an example, the Airbnbs are doing really, really good down here. Mostly because of so many people come to visit here for bachelor and bachelorette parties and spring training, and you got the Waste Management Open and just all around sunshine, right? So there's so many people that they come through here, and yeah, I mean, all of ours are doing around 20-25% ROI. I don't want to get too much into the economics and details and everything like that.
Can you tell me exactly how much you made last year on your Airbnbs?
But yeah, they are doing very well. So,
Last or 2 years ago, it was pre-pandemic, we went to Joshua Tree, my family, and based on an Instagram post, rented an Airbnb, and it turned out it was from Eric Nystrom, who played in the league a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we couldn't find the key in this. So I'm calling a cell, and it's Eric Nystrom picks up. And I'm like, so then we just started chatting and talking hockey. And him and his dad had fixed this place up. And it was incredible. Like, this place was in the middle of Joshua Tree and the stars. And it was just cool. Like, he was just passionate about turning it into this really cool, unique space. Like, you could just tell that was something he was excited about. Like, it was a one of a kind property. It was really cool. That's my Eric Nystrom awesome. Plug for his, it was called Moon Camp. If anybody's looking for a place in Joshua Tree.
Sold it. Did now I want to go too.
it's a good follow on Instagram too. So it's like, I don't know. I just like people that, cause I, you know, it, there's, when I talk to players, it's, I know that can be a struggle, right? Post career, figuring out what you want to do, right? Like, hockey is so all consuming. And you have a lot of things done for you, so that like even that can be hard, like going from everything done and all of a sudden you're on your own. And so I'm always excited when people like find something they're into. Like, was it a tough transition for you, or did you find like you had things lined up?
It wasn't that tough. Like I'm kind of easy that way. I don't really dwell on things, and when I just put my mind to something, I don't really dip my toe in it. I just dive in, right? So I knew from my hockey experience and everything that once I decided to do this, and it might sound cocky and not very Canadian or Swedish, but I knew that once I set my mind to this, that I was going to be successful. And that's why I wasn't really nervous about it. I just wanted to learn as much as I could in the beginning. And that was one thing that I think was a really big advantage for me in the beginning too, because a lot of people, they get the real estate license and everything. They put all of their last money just to get the license and everything, right? And when you're first starting out with something, it always takes a while to get going and everything. And that was a really big advantage for me, because I had the NHL money and everything, so I wasn't really in a rush to get that first paycheck and
right everything.
And I wasn't desperate or anything. I was just like, I want to learn everything in the right way, and then whatever comes from it, great, right?
Right Like, you have the advantage of saying, okay, this can be a learning process for a while until I really get the hang of it, and then you can dive in. Yeah. So your recommendation would be play 10 years of professional hockey and then get into the Airbnb space. That would be the
exactly. That would be ideal.
All right. Before we wrap up, let's get to some of these Twitter questions. So this is going to be out of left field, but this is my Twitter question that I would have posed. And I remember, because I did a book and I had a chapter on John Tortorella, and we talked a long time. And the whole you know, outdoor game thing came up, that decision he made to play you. And I actually talked to Roberto for a while. What do you remember about that? That was such an odd moment in time.
Yeah, it was. I just remember that I felt sorry for Lou because he's been playing so long with the organization and everything. And I remember Torts told me that I was going to play and everything. Then like an hour later, I saw Lou the day before on the ice with his kids skating around and everything. And I'm like, man, this night would have meant so much for him. Right. And yeah, it was a bad situation all around. Cause I was obviously happy that I was going to play, and it was like a great opportunity for me, but it was just like Lou really deserved to play that game. Right.
Right. It's such a tough call. Like, and I remember talking to John about it because, you know, you're trying to make a decision to win a hockey game and in a playoff race or whatever. And then, you know, so I think you get caught up into this short-term thinking when there's also these big personalities involved and careers involved. It's such a tough one.
Yeah, it is. And obviously I felt for Lou on a personal level because we were friends too. So that was the hard part.
Right. All right. So we're going to start with this question from Jared, who asks, and I'm save this for the end because I want to talk about this for a minute or two. Where's the best taco in Vancouver?
In Vancouver, I haven't been there in so long, so I have to Google what the spot is called now. So in Vancouver, Gringo was a spot that I had.
Gringo.
Gringo. So I always went to Gringo. When I played there, they had a Loco Taco as well. And the price for that taco was whatever my goals against average was at that time. So it was like...
Really? I did not know this.
Yeah. Back then, I played pretty good hockey, so I think it was like $2.30 or like something like that, right?
I love that. Oh my gosh. What's your go-to taco when you're testing a place out? Like what has to be the order?
So I do like the carne asada best. And I always like a lot of sauce on my tacos. Like, I'm a big sauce guy. So, sauce or like sour cream or some guac. Yeah. Yeah. That's really good stuff.
All right. And then where you are now in Arizona, or let me open it up. Best taco you've ever had.
Best taco I ever had. Oh my God. That's so hard, but I'm going to have to go with the Loco Taco at Gonza in Raleigh, because they made it super, super nice. It was like shredded beef that's been sitting and marinating for like a long time. So it was just like tender and juicy. And then they had corn, some cheese, and then they had some kind of sour cream or creme fraiche dip on it, but it was just like, yeah, it was melting in your mouth. It was really good. Yeah.
My answer is the taco stand in Encinitas, California, the carne asada.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, is it unbelievable?
Yeah.
So I strongly recommend the taco stand.
Yeah.
In California.
I've had a few tacos in Mexico too. There are like, I mean, obviously you're like trying to go where the locals go, because then you know it's really
right.
Good, right?
Yeah. All right. So that's, and I would encourage you to follow at Eddie Lack on Twitter. If you, you still do taco review videos, you still do. All right. The next question comes from Pete Evans, who wanted to know, now that you're in real estate, did you rent or own in Vancouver? And
rented,
did you keep it if you still... Okay.
I rented.
I don't know if they're looking to buy or what.
I rented in Vancouver, in Yale Town. That's where we live when we play there.
I'm always fascinated by the NHL like real estate world, where like one guy owns a house and then there's a trade and then the next guy moves into that guy's house.
Yeah,
just,
I know.
They just, people just cycle through places.
Clayton Keller is living in Austin Matthews' house here in Arizona now because Keller is building a place himself. So,
oh, is he?
So yeah, there's the hockey world is small. Like when I bought my house here and we signed for one more year in Jersey, Jason Demers moved into our house here as well. So yeah.
He's a good dude. He's, I noticed on Instagram, he's into cards collecting, and I've gotten during the pandemic into that. So I'm going to bug him about, I want to have him to really nerd out on collecting cards.
Yeah, he's great.
He's a great dude. All right. This next question comes from Ruben Hubbard, who asked a nice open-ended question. What is your most memorable goalie moment?
I think myself, when I played, it was, we were playing against LA at home with Vancouver and we won in a shootout to clinch the playoffs. And that was just like super, super cool to me. It was like two games left of the season, I think. So we were right down the wire with LA. So that was cool. I would say that in my career in general, when we won the world championship, I mean, obviously King Henrik played, but just to be part of that group and everything was something that I will remember forever.
That's awesome. He's got to be the best looking player you ever played with. King Henrik, holy cow.
I mean, I played with his twin brother too, so I don't know which one.
Oh, that's amazing. I forgot he's got a twin. All right, last question. This comes from at ASU Coach Powers. Can you ask Eddie why he's a 5 handicap, but every time we play, he shoots an 87?
Well, can you ask Coach Powers why he's listed as 5'8" in Elite Prospects, but I know he's under 5 feet.
He's under 5 feet? That seems like a big miss by Elite Prospects.
Maybe, but I also know that I don't shoot an 87 with him either. So I think...
well, Eddie, I know you got stuff to do, so I'll let you get at it. But thanks for taking time, man. I'm glad we were able to do this.
Thank you. I appreciate you a lot.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye.
I want to thank Eddie Lack for joining the podcast. We have been trying to get Eddie for probably the last year since he retired on the podcast. He is one of those guys. I love people like Eddie Lack that are super interesting people who the fact that they played in the NHL might be like the fourth or fifth most interesting thing about him. He's, you know, one of those guys is always up to something. And also we have a shared love for tacos that is very real. So Eddie, thanks a lot for making this happen. That was a fun conversation. A few things, a little bit of news. I'm very excited. I'm going to share this with you guys first, listeners of the Full 60. I will be joining old friend Sean Gentile every week on the Athletic Hockey Show starting May 18th. It's a little bit of the feedback we've been getting. The Athletic Hockey Show is fantastic. And Ian Mendez and Haley and Sean McIndoe, Pierre and Scott, they all do a killer job on that podcast. But, and you have to admit, it's a little Canadian-centric. They wanted, listeners said they wanted a little bit more American coverage. So who else to bring in than Sean and I. And if you think, if you're guessing we're going to go over the top with how American we're going to make it, you're probably right. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be fun. Anytime I have an excuse to get on the phone or on a Zoom or hang out and have a beer with Sean Gentile, I do it. And now we get to record it and call it work and share it with you. So that starts May 18th on the Athletic Hockey Show feed. So if you're not subscribing to that, just go to, I don't know, Spotify or Apple Pods or wherever you listen to podcasts and hit subscribe, and that will automatically feed in to your podcast. It's going to be so much fun. We're going to do it through the playoffs, and then it's going to be fun, and then we'll reassess from there. But I can't wait to do that with Sean. It's going to be so much fun. A couple other things. Make sure you listen to Scott and Pierre's conversation with Doug Wilson, GM of the San Jose Sharks. He was on the Two-Man Advantage edition of the Athletic Hockey Show on Wednesday. That was so good. And Kevin Kurz did a really interesting story in The Athletic about talking to Doug Wilson and how they're not rebuilding in San Jose, essentially because there's too many huge contracts on big-name players, and you know who those are. But they're hitting the reset button. Probably the hardest place to be in hockey is, you know, it's easy to tear the whole thing down. It's hard, and we've seen Chicago try to do it and some of these other teams to find the middle ground. It'll be fascinating to see what San Jose does there. But I got to say, if Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns and Logan Couture, Evander Kane, like that's, you know, yes, they're aging. Yes, they're probably making more in some cases than you'd want. But I do have faith that Doug Wilson can probably squeeze another playoff run or two out of that, or at least appearance. I just think the degree of difficulty to pull that off is so hard, because what that franchise needs most is high-end young talent. And the easiest way to get high-end young talent is to be terrible. And it's going to be hard to be terrible when you have those pros like I mentioned in San Jose. So while I admire Doug Wilson's marching on and trying to keep things competitive in San Jose, there really hasn't been a good blueprint in how to pull it off. Really, the best thing you can do is follow the Chicago Blackhawks plan and get really lucky in the lottery. Like that, if you're a San Jose Shark, and that's not a plan, but if you're a San Jose Sharks fan, you're hoping you get your version of Kirby Doc. And even that doesn't guarantee anything, and you've got to hit another picks, and you have to accumulate draft picks. All of that's really hard. But I'm not sure what else you can do if you're San Jose and you're tied into those contracts. There's no easy solution. And so you've placed your wager on those players, and now you have to see it through. It's going to be a challenge for San Jose fans. I wouldn't be surprised if next year looks much better. If they can address the goaltending, that would go a long way in kind of creating a Band-Aid. And there are some options this offseason in goal for San Jose to explore. So if they're able to spend, if they're able to move on from Martin Jones, I think there maybe is a path forward for the Sharks and Doug Wilson. But it'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. All right. That is it. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to Eddie Lack for having the conversation. Next week, awesome conversation with an old friend from my days in Atlanta, Aaron Andrews. It was so fun to catch up with Aaron. He is a blast, and it was a heck of a conversation. I can't wait for you to hear it. So get ready for that next week. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.